This is Vern Casper. Party Line was put on the air to give voice to problem solving in our community.
Good morning and welcome to Party Line on WILO and Boone's Best 102.7. Also streaming live on HoosierLandTV.com. Each weekday, Party Line brings you conversations with local leaders, community organizations, business owners, elected officials, event organizers, and the people making a difference across Clinton, Boone, Carroll, and surrounding counties. We also want to hear from you. Our phone lines are open throughout the program at 765-659-3338. Party Line on WILO and Boone's Best 102.7 is made possible by TC Trailers. If you're not pulling a TC trailer, you're not pulling your weight. Ivy Tech Community College, changing lives. Big O Tires in Lebanon. Big deals. Save money now and 24/7 at WeLoveBigDeals.com. And your free local news source, Clinton, Carroll, or BooneCountyDailyNews.com. The Party Line online telecast on HoosierLandTV.com is brought to you by 51 West Event Center, The Farmers Bank, Shoup's Country Foods, Culligan, Water of Boone and Clinton County, Day and Ginda Funeral Home, Solidarity Community Federal Credit Union, Sam I Am Carpet Cleaning, Big O Tires in Lebanon, Arbor Wood by Shoup's, Welty Exteriors, Newell Gas, Wesley Manor Retirement Community, Stone Alley Hardware and Industrial Supply, Jerry's Body Shop, Community Foundation serving Carroll, Clinton, and Howard counties, Simplify Family Dental, Tornado Roofing, Siding, and Gutters, Witham Health Services, Ellis Jewelers, Marshan's Window Tinting, Avery Home Store, VFW Post 1110 in Frankfort, Copper Electric Services, LLC, Braden Business Systems, Lanen's Furniture and Mattress, and Mann Chevrolet GMC in Delphi. Whether you're listening on WILO, Boone's Best 102.7, watching on Hoosierland TV, or joining us online, we invite you to be part of the show. Call us at 765-659-3338. This is Party Line.
And as always, we appreciate you joining us for Party Line on WILO and Boone's Best 102.7, especially on a Friday because we're heading into the weekend. I don't know anybody that's more excited about the weekend this week than Melissa Miller across the desk from me. Are you ready for the weekend?
I guess. I mean, it's just another weekend. So okay. I'll probably end up spending most of it. I actually promised my grandson I would try and help with 4-H projects.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He'd like
that is that time of the year.
Yeah, that voice that you kind of heard.
It's Alan Dunn.
Is Alan Dunn.
He's our guest.
Who's very familiar with the 4-H program and boys doing 4-H.
Yes.
It's a different experience, isn't it?
Last year.
Last year?
Yeah, that's right. Youngest is in his 10th year. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what kind of projects is he working on?
He has a welding project and an aerospace, which is a rocket. He's mm-hmm. building a rocket. Mm. Yeah.
Have you tested it yet, the rocket?
No, it's still in the process of construction.
Sure.
Yeah. It's a very detailed process. You'd be surprised. Yeah.
Oh, no, our daughter did that one year, and she was like, oh, my gosh. Even as a little child, excuse me, same thing. She was like, oh, wow, this is very detailed.
That's all right. Mm-hmm. I think my grandson's excited the fact that it's his 10th year because that gives him 3 years of no competition in the crops.
All right. Well, we are glad you joined us today, and a lot of things happening. We'll get to those in just a little bit. Maybe the good news is we should have a nice day today, right?
Yeah, today's going to be pretty nice. Tomorrow, too. We might, possible chance, maybe in the afternoon, see a pop-up or something, but the real rain chances are coming in on Sunday and Monday.
All right.
So
that means I'll be good tomorrow morning for the hog jog?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It has, you know, in all the years I've done the hog jog, I think it's only kind of missed, well, knock on wood.
It's kind of a misty
morning.
Yeah,
it's kind of only missed it a couple of times, so we've been very lucky, but tomorrow should be a great day. I hope you'll come out and join us for the hog jog. In the meantime, Alan is, Alan Dunn, which, I mean, has his hands in a lot of things in our community.
A lot of hats.
A lot of hats you wear. County Council, Frankfort Airport Board, and Corn Growers Association, and your position there?
This year, I was fortunate enough to be chosen president.
Yeah. That's what I thought of, the Indiana Corn Growers Association.
Yeah, that's been
quite
fun. I've enjoyed that.
Tell us a little bit about the Indiana Corn Growers Association, and you know, for folks that maybe aren't in agriculture, what exactly you guys do?
Well, the Indiana Corn Growers Association is the I guess, the policy organization representing corn growers across the state. And so by that, I mean we would be the lobbying group for legislation or regulation at the county, I'm sorry, at the state and federal level. And so with a focus, I think, on the state level for ICGA. So we are then a partner organization or a member organization of the National Corn Growers Association, which takes the lead on federal issues. But we do have a voice and try to work with our U.S. senators and U.S. representatives on federal issues like E15 or the Farm Bill, those types of issues, too. So we are responsible for kind of representing Indiana's farmers at the table, so to speak, on legislative issues affecting agriculture.
And if you could, talk about some of the biggest issues, because I think people see farmers and they drive these million-dollar machines and they have nice pickup trucks for the most part and think they're all rich. That isn't really the case, and some years are better than others. Can you touch on that a little bit?
Well, some years are better than others, and
Mother Nature doesn't help.
Having a lot of dollars come in is offset by a lot of dollars going out, and oftentimes there's not a lot left at the end of the story. But right now at the policy level, I think we are focused maybe more on the federal level, and with two things in particular. One being trying to get year-round availability of E15, so 15% ethanol in our nation's gasoline fuel supply. Currently we're at 10%, and we have a low price environment right now for corn. And so we're trying to figure out a way to stimulate demand, good old supply and demand, Econ 101, increased demand, and you should see an increase in the price that farmers receive. So we're trying to get the nation to at least have the ability. This is not a mandate mandating that we move the fuel supply to 15% ethanol. It's just making the fuel supply eligible to contain 15% ethanol, which would use potentially billions of bushels of corn. So it's a big deal. In Indiana, approximately 45% of the corn that we grow is used for ethanol, gets crushed into ethanol here within the state. So it's a huge, huge driver for revenue and for net profitability for Indiana's farmers. So that's a real focus, is working. A bill passed the House just a little over a month ago authorizing E15, and it is now up for debate in the Senate. Where we think it could come up as soon as July for discussion. So I'll be making a trip to Washington in July to meet with legislators and express Indiana's support for that policy there. At the same time, we'll also be talking about our second big issue, which is the Farm Bill. So last year, you may recall, there was the One Big Beautiful Bill. And in the One Big Beautiful Bill, there was some portions of what we can normally we consider to be the Farm Bill got rolled into that bill. And so that was some of the price support, the farm safety net provisions got rolled into that. It's been very important that those got passed and updated, because they had not been updated since 2018 and had really lost all touch with reality in terms of the cost structure of modern farming. But that left the remainder of the Farm Bill still in that 2018 mindset and structure. And so that's the things like conservation, all of the programs like conservation reserve program, conservation security program, EQIP, things that farmers around here would know about, the research title money that would go to the land grant universities, all of those sort of things have just kind of been hanging out there waiting for reauthorization. And so the House again has passed their version of the Farm Bill, and it's going to the Senate again during that July window for potential discussion. And so that'll be a real focus of the trip that I and a few other of Indiana's farmer leaders, corn grower farmer leaders, are going to go out and try to influence.
I know you're part of the Corn Growers Association, but you had to be happy yesterday to see that China finally bought some beans.
Well, yeah, we work very closely in Indiana. I'm glad you brought that up, Cindy, because really Indiana is very unique. Of all of the, we'll call them row crop producing states, there's three of us, and I off the top of my head, I can't remember what the other two are, but that have a joint corn and soybean association. So we share staff. They're independent entities, but we share staff. They operate out of the same building, and we have a very high level of coordination, because let's face it, if you're a corn grower, you're very likely a soybean grower, and vice versa. So I think that puts us in a position of leadership oftentimes, because, you know, there are times, it's rare, but there are times when a corn grower's policy priority and a soybean grower policy priority could be slightly different. And biofuels is frankly one of those, where sometimes what may be great for ethanol may not be as good for biodiesel, for instance. And so Indiana is uniquely positioned within the agricultural industry to be a leader, because we can, we have a structure that allows us to deal with those things in-house, or to have those discussions in-house, and then, you know, take that discussion to the federal level, to the national level, organizational level.
Yeah, that seems like a good use of dollars as well. I mean, it seems smart to do it
well,
that way.
Well, I'll share with you something that I just learned last week. So by law, corn growers pay a checkoff of 0.5 cents per bushel. Mm-hmm. And by law, no more than 10% of those dollars collected can be used for administrative purposes. In the Indiana Corn Growers Association and the Indiana Corn Marketing Council, and that's a separate group that actually administers and oversees the checkoff dollars funds. But we are at 4.7% for our administrative cost. And of that 4.7%, two-thirds of it is the cost of conducting the audit that we conduct every year to, sure, to show the membership and to show the General Assembly how the dollars are being spent and that they're being collected at the point of sale and all of those kinds of things. So the actual amount of dollars that are being spent for administrative purposes, the staff, the travel, those kinds of things, is very, very small. We are incredibly efficient, and the reason that we can do that is because of the shared staff structure. From the corn side, we get to share that cost with the soybean side, and vice versa.
Well, and I think if you're a farmer, you have to be efficiently minded anyway, right?
Yeah,
every penny counts.
You know, both corn and soybean side are governed by farmer volunteer leaders who have that mindset, and I think that shows, mm-hmm, through. Yeah,
absolutely. Again, Alan Dunn, with several hats right now. He's talking about the Indiana Corn Growers Association, which he is president of. But we have a lot of other things to talk about too. So,
well, I want to go back to you talking about the EF-15. With Indiana being in such a unique state, I mean, let's face it, most of the acres here are either it's corn or soybeans, just
right,
like you said,
right.
And a lot of times it's pretty much 50-50,
right?
When we add all those up, how many ethanol plants do we have in Indiana? Because we do have quite a few.
We have 14, and we just this week had a groundbreaking with a POET facility in southern Indiana where they announced or broke ground on a major expansion. So it's 14 and growing. Maybe not growing in the sense of additional numbers of new plants, but we have multiple plants that have announced or have started on expansions. So it's 40% and growing in terms of bushels that are crushed. You know, really one of the things that's you would not think about this, or it doesn't come top of mind, but one of the biggest challenges we have is how do we move the DDGs, the dried distillers grains, which are the byproduct. It's the solids left after you crush corn to make the liquid ethanol fuel. We have a solid byproduct, and it's used for feed, animal feed, but because we produce so much ethanol, we produce more DDGs than we can use in Indiana. So it's really important that we have an export market for that, whether that export market is to another state, you know, maybe to the southeast where they have a lot of poultry operations, and more it's becoming international. And so a real focus, and this doesn't, I would have not thought of this initially, but one of the real focuses on policy that Corn Growers is trying to support is the improvement and improved accessibility to container shipping via the Ohio River and Burns Harbor on Lake Michigan, so that DDGs can be loaded into containers, sent by rail to those ports, and then moved internationally. You know, these are not things that people that need that want to buy a Panamax ship worth of. They want to be able to buy, you know, 10 containers worth of this to use as a feed, to keep it fresh, use it in a timely manner, and then turn it over. So we've had a real focus. We've been working with the railroads and with the Indiana Port Authority to try and improve the options for container shipping here in Indiana. And, of course, if we can get that infrastructure and mechanism in place, it would benefit way beyond just agriculture. You know, we're helping take the lead on it because it would have a direct benefit for us, but it would help anyone, Subaru, Isuzu, you know, sending a car on a,
absolutely,
you know, on a train to a loadout facility, you know. So yeah, that's been a diversion, that's not the right word, that's been a topic that I would not have thought we would be so heavily involved,
sure,
in when I got started on the board.
Well, I know you're mainly with the corn growers, but as a producer, you're very locked into the soybean side of it. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing on the market for soybeans as far as between feed and food product and then going to the biodiesel?
Well, I think what we've seen in the last 12 to 24 months is how just reliant we are on China. And when and because so many of our soybeans get exported to China on an annual basis, that when they're not there, it's really negative to prices. When they are there, things operate pretty smoothly. We are so efficient at growing what we grow that I'm not worried about shortfalls. I think there's plenty of soybeans to do what we need to do. The bigger risk is that we can have our part of the system optimized, and then if another link in the chain gets broken somewhere because of a trade dispute, the whole thing starts to, you know, maybe it's like more like if the Jenga piece from down to the bottom gets pulled out from under us, the whole thing can fall apart, and us doing what we do so well can be almost work against us in the sense that we have this big pile of soybeans that need to go somewhere. So right now we're in a good spot. We've had some successful trade negotiations, and we have a deal in place for China to take a large amount of our expected production for this crop and the next two crops. And so, you know, if all of that comes to pass, and then with the increase in biodiesel, which is very timely given some of the upward pressures we've had on prices of the petroleum side, things look pretty promising in my opinion right now moving forward.
That's good news. And how are you feeling about the tariffs at this point? Are they still on your mind? Are you just working around them? What's the thought process?
Well, there's still certainly some uncertainty there as negotiations continue in certain areas. But in many areas, we do have some certainty in the sense that, yes, there are tariffs in place, but at least we know the rules to the game. So if we've come to an agreement with the European Union, for instance. We've got agreements with Japan, with South Korea. We are making progress with China. I think that what we're going to see is that in the last meeting with President Trump and President Xi, they came up with this new China Board of Trade concept. And that is being developed right now. There's a proposal that's being that was just published in the Federal Register asking for public comment. And my reading of the tea leaves would be that they're trying to get something in place that when President Xi comes to the United States in September, they'll be able to announce what that looks like. But the kind of underlying theory there is that non-controversial items like soybeans would be either at a greatly reduced tariff or perhaps even exempt from tariff. And both sides strategically, China and the United States, would reserve the tariff function for the items that they think are important domestically for their security or well-being. So I feel optimistic and as a whole that things are going in the right direction after a few months of going in the wrong direction.
Fingers crossed anyway.
Yeah.
For sure.
How do you see all that affecting fertilizers and chemicals and stuff that some are produced here in the States, but a lot of them are produced elsewhere.
Absolutely.
So that's been a major concern for producers.
And there's starting to be a little bit more of a focus. I think just necessarily the initial focus was on the revenue side. And so by revenue, that would be what we sell and how much we sell it for. And then if it's a shortfall to covering our costs, can we get some safety net coverage from the Congress? That's kind of been the focus. But I think more and more we're switching towards the other side of that equation, saying, hey, profitability has two sides. One is the revenue you make, and two is the prices you pay for the inputs. And we need to focus a little more on that input side, with fertilizer costs, I think, being the biggest line item in most farmers' budgets. And we have some tariffs there that have been put in place that are hurting the farmer and Morocco in particular with phosphate. So right now the highest price fertilizer is phosphorus, and we produce very little to none domestically. Just a little bit in Florida, but for the most part, nothing meaningful in the United States. The world's largest phosphate producer is Morocco, and we're charging them a large tariff at the moment, which immediately gets passed on to the American farmer. So if we want to help the farm economy and help the American farmer, why wouldn't we pull that tariff off? And so we've been spending a lot of time lobbying with the administration and with members of Congress to take a real close look at that tariff and see if we could pull that off and get some relief to farmers.
I know we want to move on to other subjects too, but I do want to ask you about weather.
Sure.
I mean, we all know weather affects agriculture from day one, clear through the crop and harvest and everything else. We started out with an extremely wet spring. People were able to get their crops in. Some are going to have to replant if they haven't already. But what are you seeing? What's your biggest concern with the El Nino factor and everything that they say is going to be coming in? What's your biggest concern as a producer with the weather?
Well, immediately top of mind has been I haven't even got all my nitrogen on my corn yet because we cannot get a break of more than 3 days between rains. So that's a concern, immediately. But for the most part, I felt fortunate that we did get it planted in a timely manner with minimal replant. So far, if we continue to get rains, it may be past the replant window, and we've got what we've got. I think when I worry about an El Nino situation is, El Nino just got announced officially, last week, maybe it was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And so we're just starting to really, we've been talking about it a lot, but it's just now starting. And a lot of times that tends to be a wet fall for the central part of the United States. And it's been a while since we've had a wet harvest and they're no fun. And I kind of dread that. I mean, we all end up getting through it, but it tends to be long falls with a lot of mud and it's just not any fun. But I always try to think positive. I'm a glass half full kind of guy. And I think that what the positive that could come from an El Nino situation is that it does tend to be, and I don't wish ill will on any farmer anywhere in the world, but generally speaking, it tends to be a struggle for South America on an El Nino year. And if there's a struggle in South America, prices will go up, and that would benefit the U.S. farmer. So I do think that that's another reason, as I look forward, thinking that there could be some price improvements moving forward is that I think there could be some production issues in South America next will be our winter. Their fall and winter would be their spring and summer. So I think that could be a potential silver lining.
And Argentina, the farmers down there are already struggling, is my understanding. So that could be good for the U.S. I feel bad for them, but we are the only country that's taught everybody else how to farm. Competing against them.
That's right. That's right. So there are some early indications that some of those weather things are changing. Australia is way below normal in rainfall so far this year. India's monsoon has been lighter than normal so far this year. So we're starting to see some of those. El Ninos tend to impact the southern hemisphere more than the northern hemisphere. We tend to be a little bit wet, but generally speaking, we have good production years because rain makes grain, as they say. And if you have a drowned out spot, yes, that's true. But the rest of your field had plenty of water and, tends to produce above normal. So It giveth and taketh away.
Absolutely. Again, Alan Dunn is our guest on Party Line today, not only with the Indiana Corn Growers Association as president there. He's the Frankfort Airport Board County Councilman as well. Let's talk about the airport. I know that you said there's not a lot going on out there right now, but as we see Lebanon especially kind of blooming, and we continue to see a little bit of Lafayette starting to kind of head our way too, any thoughts on if the airport is thinking of expansions? Or, I honestly, I've been to another small airport. We have such a nice little airport.
We are certainly positioning ourselves for that growth. I don't know that I would say expansion. In fact, I would say this is not a step back. It was a reorientation, I guess I would say. We had thought long and hard about extending the runway from 5,000 feet to 6,000 feet. But to do a project of that scope and scale, you have to have a federal partner. I mean, it has to go through the Federal Aviation Program, and typically those are grants where it's 90% federal, 5% state, 5% local. But the federal government was giving us feedback that because of their budget limitations, it was going to be at least a decade out before we would even be able to get on the, on the list. And then, we'd have to wait for those in front of us to get their funding. And so we decided to pivot. And what we're doing instead, and we're going to do that later this summer, is we're going to groove our runways. And so what is the driving factor is there's a chart that says for this size of a plane with this weight rating and such, they need so much distance to stop or to take off. Well, you can kind of consider it a cheat code somewhat that if you can put some friction on that runway through grooving it, that you can shorten the distance and allow that plane to stop you know, in a shorter distance because of that friction helping to slow the
plane
down.
Yeah, gives them more traction when they hit.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So we're going to do, you know, at a tiny, tiny fraction of the cost, we're going to groove our runway that will allow us to take a larger category of aircraft with a focus on corporate aircraft. So, you know, what we would like to see, and we use this all the time with Frito-Lay. PepsiCo flies in from Plano, Texas, with the PepsiCo headquarters. They fly in to see the Frito-Lay leadership or plant. They'll fly in with their corporate aircraft to our facility. We're limited there on what size of aircraft they can bring. If we do this grooving project, we'll be able to do an even larger aircraft. And so when I say we're trying to position ourselves, we're thinking, you know, with all this growth that you mentioned, both coming south from Lafayette and north from the Lebanon LEAP District area, what we want to be able to say is to a business, hey, if you want to have a flight department, if you have a, you know, international division and you want to be able to fly, it allows us to position ourselves, not just Clinton County, but the region, to have headquarters where this is going to be the base of the operation, and then we're going to fly to see our other national or international facilities. So we are, as a council person with economic development goals and aspirations, we always look at the airport as, you know, one of the crown jewels of infrastructure that we can show in the community. And I've used the analogy before, maybe even on this show, but it's like when you have a blue chip athlete coming to a college campus to look to see where they might want to play, you go show them the training facility.
Absolutely.
And you go show them. And so we whether that company has a flight department or owns any aircraft or not, we show them that just to show what we are capable of and the resources we have in the community. And it always impresses. And so we use that as a tool, whether they really need the airport or not.
We have a couple of hotels. They're what I would consider like smaller, mm-hmm. you know. Any thought ever of, you know, maybe we need to put something else closer to the airport there?
We have a couple of hotels that are going to be in development here over the next 12 months or so. They'll be out at the interchange of 28 and 65. But yes, we see that. And in fact, I know that at least one major ag equipment manufacturer looked long and hard at Clinton County and chose not to locate here because they didn't have hotel facilities for when they had dealer meetings and mm-hmm. and brought training staff in for training, that they didn't have a place for them to stay local. So that's a hole that we have had a hotel study done here locally that showed we could support. I mean, it's kind of obvious, sort of Captain Obvious, but now we have the data to back up that we could support some additional hotel rooms in the community, and we're moving forward with that. Yeah.
Looking forward to that. Yeah, I think that'll be a nice amenity as well.
Yeah.
We just had the grand opening of Nickel and Rye, you know, on June 1st. And I was telling everybody when we were trying to open, no, it was before that, actually. It was a couple of days before, and we were there and we were all outside talking. They weren't open yet. Some gentlemen had come in for the race, and they come in every year, and they were looking for a restaurant here in downtown Frankfurt. They had an Airbnb.
Okay.
And so I do feel like people want to be close to, you know, Indy, but not in
Indy. Right.
And we kind of fill that little niche a little bit there. Ooh. And so having a couple hotels would be great there, too.
Yeah,
one was from Chicago, one was from Wisconsin.
That's a great way to describe it. I think we have such a unique opportunity because it's not just Indianapolis, it's Purdue and Lafayette, West Lafayette.
Absolutely.
where we can be close but not in the middle of the density.
From a county council standpoint, what are some other things that you think at this point would benefit our community?
Well, I like to say that we don't need new taxes, we need new taxpayers. Unfortunately, you know, new taxpayers means some sort of economic development or growth, whether that's housing growth or it's industrial commercial growth, and we struggle sometimes as a community that doesn't like to change. And so I feel like that's one of our real focuses right now. We are in the midst of trying to figure out how things will play out with the recently passed Senate Enrolled Act 1 that the General Assembly passed in 2025. That's the local tax restructuring bill. And its overall intent was to lessen the reliance on property taxes and move more towards a reliance on income taxes, local income taxes. And that was designed to be phased in between now and 2031. And so we're going to, for the property taxes that'll be paid, due and payable in 2027, we'll start to see some of those impacts influence both the city, county, and well, anybody's budget, school's budget, anybody that's funded through property tax dollars. And what it tells us is that we need to change our orientation a little bit. I think before we had a real focus on assessed value, on property, because it was the major base of local support. Now we're going to move more towards income, and I think necessarily we have to start thinking about what types of jobs we have and what they pay, and having the people in Clinton County to fill those jobs, because when you fill out your tax return now, they will ask where your address is, your residency, and your local income tax will go to the county of residency for where you live. So what that means is if we get really good jobs, but the people go home to Lafayette, Tippecanoe County, Boone County, we don't benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And so
they're not eating dinner here. They're not going downtown.
We don't have a local sales tax, you know. And so it exacerbates our problem rather than helps it. So we have to kind of reorient our thinking and start making sure that we have the infrastructure and the housing in place, so that we have people we need to create the jobs, and then we need them to live here to really fully benefit. So it's a new challenge and a new environment for sure.
We do have a caller on the line. You up for a call this morning?
Sure.
All right. Good morning, caller.
Yes, good morning, girls. Hey, how much money does our airport take in a year as far as, do they make money, our airport?
That's a great question. We have a budget that's kind of, it bounces around a little bit depending on what project maybe we have in a given year, but generally speaking, we're between $600,000 and $700,000 budget, of which about two-thirds of that comes from local taxes, so property taxes. There is a...
So I'm paying for that airport.
There's a little bit, yeah. And then...
You said two-thirds.
Yeah, roughly two-thirds. The remainder is generated from operations of the airport. So fuel sales, hangar rents of the planes that are housed there. The airport does own property, or, you know, we're required by federal law to have a kind of a restricted space around the area. So we have some farmland that then we rent out to local farmers and get that farmland cash rent income. But yeah, there is a property tax base. It is countywide. It is a Frankfort Clinton County airport. So it's on every tax bill in the county. And that is part of the reason that we as a board try to make sure that that facility is available for use to the community. We've had community days. We invite the community in. We also make our facilities available for, we've had lots of weddings and parties and things. We have meeting space that lots of organizations use to have public meetings in the airport terminal building. So we try to be...
How many people in Clinton County have an airplane out there? In Clinton County, how many people own an airplane out there at that airport?
Oh, that's a tough question. I don't know the answer off the top of my head, but I think...
What would you say it is?
I'd say there's probably... if I had to guess, I'd say between 40 and 50 aircraft out there.
So there's 40 or 50 people from Clinton County flying out of Frankfort Airport then.
Well, there's more than that that utilize the airport.
Right.
Though what you would be talking about is people that have an aircraft based at the airport. But there are more individuals that use the airport than just those. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about ConAgra, but I do know about Frito-Lay. And Frito-Lay goes into Indianapolis. And you go to Indianapolis to see those big shots. They never, ever, in the 23 years I was there, ever came to Frankfort, Indiana at that airport. Now, they don't even fly in parts. They fly them into Indianapolis. We have to go get them out of Indianapolis. Would you agree with that?
We don't generally get parts deliveries to our airport. That's true, and with the exception of a very, very urgent emergency where time is of the essence. We have had small cargo aircraft land with parts. I can't remember exactly what the situation was, but there was I want to say it was NHK had an emergency that they were going to stop the whole facility if they didn't get a particular part in, and we flew it in.
But we do have
on a fairly regular basis have small executive aircraft with the leadership, executive leadership from PepsiCo fly in to
I've
visit.
Never seen it happen in my
yep.
lifetime.
Yep.
Never seen it.
It does.
I mean, they're the lower people of PepsiCo. The CEO of PepsiCo has never been in Frankfort, and we're the biggest plant in the world.
Well, I can't tell you who's exactly on those aircraft, but I know that we've had many aircraft from PepsiCo come to Frankfort.
Okay. I just wish we would spend money wisely for things that we need, but don't put our wants in there. Well, we want this, we want that, we want, because we're broke. We are literally broke. Do you understand what I'm saying? They had to raise property taxes just to pay for the schools and stuff. You understand what I'm trying to say?
I do. But I guess
takes control of nothing.
I guess what I would suggest to you, though, is that you have to make those infrastructure investments in order to get the new taxpayers that allow us to spread the burden to a larger base.
So you think we're going to have industry from 65 to Frankfort, Indiana?
Eventually, yeah. I absolutely do.
You do?
Yes.
You have any idea how long that might be?
Well, I think we're on the cusp of some of that starting to happen here very soon. The thing that's frustrating as a council member or a local elected official is that's all private land with private deals that an individual has to agree to sell, and whether I want them to or not, I don't have any control over that. So it's a little outside of our control as local officials. But based on what I'm hearing, you know, just kind of out there, scuttlebutt, there's some things happening, and I expect we're going to start to see some development happen here in the next few months.
Well, that's good. Hey, God bless you, and I hope you the best of luck.
All right.
Have a wonderful week.
Thanks, Carl.
Thanks so
good
much.
To hear from you. What about the old, was it Mallory's that's sitting? What about that location there?
It is being used. It's actually being used as a warehouse facility. There are, believe it or not, engines from Caterpillar being stored in there.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's being used.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I learned something new today.
Yeah.
All right. I know we could talk to you for another hour. We don't get to have you in very often, but you have so much information, so we appreciate you coming in. Alan Dunn, again, county councilman, president of the Indiana Corn Growers Association on the Frankfort Airport Board, and a lot of other things as well, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I had one last question come in.
Sure.
And I'll do this, and then we'll cut out. You had a question from a guest wanting to know whether or not you miss him.
Chief Shoemaker. I miss Chief Shoemaker daily. I told you, Mel, that he wasn't going to let me hear the end of it, calling me his opening act today.
Yeah.
I know. We got that backwards, didn't we?
I did have one last question, but and then Carl called. But you were talking about doing the ridging, which I understand the friction, it, you know, mm-hmm. helps enable to slow them down, shortens their path that they have to have. But what does that do to the lifetime of the runway? How often now? I mean, I know that's got to break it down a little bit. It's not going to last as long because the ridges are cut into it.
It doesn't have an impact on the lifespan because that concrete is feet deep.
Yeah.
You know, and you're talking about making a quarter to less than a half inch groove in it. So you're really not affecting the weight rating or the overall strength rating of the pavement itself. That pavement does have a lifespan, and we are well into that lifespan. And so that is one of the things that's starting to appear on the far horizon of the airport's airport improvement plan. We have to submit a plan each year to the Federal Aviation Administration of what we want to do and what's on the timeline, because they are, as a grant funder, so integrally involved with us. And that's going to be, Melissa, one of the big things of maybe the next decade is going to be we'll have to do a runway reconstruction, because that concrete does have a lifespan.
And at that time, would you think of trying to incorporate it maybe a little longer, since we couldn't get on the list anyway? Maybe then
we've talked
those
about
things
that.
Hopefully line up.
So we've talked about that, and the short answer is probably not, because there's a different pot of money for a reconstruction versus an extension.
Gotcha.
And so we have to go where we think we can get funded.
Absolutely. No, I understand that. Alan Dunn, thank you so much.
Always
great to have
you
on. We appreciate the time today. All right. We are at the halfway point. You heard that voice of Frankfort Police Chief Scott Shoemaker. He's our next guest and in-house. We'll be back with Party Line on WILO and Boone's Best 102.7.